Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My friends, Haiti is only getting worse. Since the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse back in July of 2021, heavily armed and violent gangs have extended their grip over large parts of Haiti. In a video that I had published this past month on February 27th of this year, 2024, I had explained how Haiti had gotten to this terrible point that it is at. The story itself is a very long and brutal one. It is one that is filled with racism, brutality, and disasters, both man-made and natural. And for anyone who is watching this right now, I am not going to retell the entire story here again, as many people who are watching this probably have already seen that video. So if you haven't and you want to know the full context, then you should check that out. But things have gotten even worse since the last video that I made, and this is the short of it. Back in the year 2019, a protracted crisis in Haiti would escalate, with a fuel crisis sparking protests, violence, and food shortages. Also, at the same time, it would block access for humanitarian organizations, which would only in turn deepen the crisis across the country. More than half of the country's 11 million citizens who live under the poverty line were hit especially hard during these times. Unfortunately, though, conditions would not improve. No, instead what would happen is that they would grow worse with COVID-19. This would be followed by additional lockdowns, gang violence, and political instability that would result in the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, and from that, plunge the nation into a state of almost civil war. In the power vacuum that would follow the assassination of Moïse back in 2021, Ariel Henry, who was the prime minister under Moïse, would assume power, with the support of several nations, including the United States, backing him. The thing is, though, even before Moïse's assassination, the militias and armed groups that had been ravaging the country had existed alongside politicians. These would be individuals that would use them to do their bidding, including everything from intimidating the opposition to collecting votes. I am saying this right now, but the sheer amount of corruption that exists within Haiti is easily a video in and of itself, just like when I went and covered South Africa. With the dwindling of the country's elected officials, though, many of these rebel or gang forces would end up stepping up in place of the government, utilizing violence to take control of at least 80% of the capital, Port-au-Prince. These groups, which include paramilitary and former police officers who pose as community leaders, have been responsible for the increase in killings, kidnappings, and assaults since Moïse's death. According to a report that was released by the UN, more than 8,400 people were killed, injured, or kidnapped in 2023. Which, mind you, is an increase of 122% from 2022. This problem would only grow worse when Haiti would fail to hold elections to elect new officials multiple times. Henry Ariel had said that this was due to logistical problems or violence, which to a degree is true, but that did not matter for the population, and protests would ring out against him. Eventually, it would come to be that there were no more actual elected officials that were running Haiti. Instead, Ariel was effectively ruling by decree. By the time that Henry would announce this last year that elections would be postponed again, this time to 2025, well, the armed groups would only dial up their violence even more in the capital. And that, my friends, unfortunately brings us to where we are today. I said in my previous video that the government of Haiti was on the verge of collapse and that things were only going to get worse. And guess what? They got worse. For those of you who had seen my previous video, you may remember how I had said that on the 26th of January, a judge from Kenya's High Court had halted the deployment of police officers to Haiti on the grounds that the National Security Council lacked the legal power to actually send police officers abroad. What this would do is temporarily put a stall on any outside forces being able to come in and stabilize Haiti. Though, at the same time that this did happen, the government of Kenya did say that they would appeal the ruling. And that, right there, was pretty much going to be the status quo for the remainder of the next month. That being, until on the 29th of February, literally 2 days after the previous video that I had made released, while Ariel Henry was in Kenya signing the deployment agreement, a new wave of violence would break out back in the capital of Haiti. When this would happen, gunfire would be directed at the country's main airport, as well as many businesses that were in the area. Alongside that, two different police stations were seized. The gangs appeared to be working together, specifically in order to try and overthrow the government while Henry was away. And indeed, that is pretty much what happened. One of the gang leaders that we were talking about, Jimmy Cherizere, would go and release a video stating that the goal of his operation was specifically to prevent Henry from returning to Haiti, and that if Ariel Henry did not step down, that there would be a civil war. Reports had said at the time that Mr. Henry had planned to land in the Haitian capital of Port-au-Prince. But with the airport closed down due to the gang's attempt to seize it and the neighboring Dominican Republic turning the plane away, the pilot of his aircraft eventually had to land in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. Haitian media would immediately report that Mr. Henry was seeking alternative routes back to the country, while diplomatic pressure was mounting across the world for him to agree to a transitional government and just step down. But meanwhile, as all of that is going down, tension is still remaining high in Haiti, with Jimmy Barbecue Cherizaire warning that, quote, if Ariel Henry does not resign, we'll be heading straight for a civil war that will lead to genocide. And the threat that he was offering there was very real. Cherizaire was said at the time to have the support of other gangs as part of a coalition named Vive Ensemble, which means live together. Though that coalition was also very quick to dissolve after the initial attacks, other gangs would still manage to launch attacks together with Cherizaire's G9 gang, including attacks on police stations, the country's international airport, the national soccer stadium, and two major prisons that would result in the release of literally thousands of criminals. Oh, that's right, that is something that actually happened, and I'm going to need to explain that here, so let's just go over the sequence of events of exactly how this occurs. Over the weekend of March 1st through March 3rd, a veritable wave of violence would explode across Haiti. This is something that had already been kind of happening in the country, but the level of it and the fact that the national penitentiary was sieged, that came as a shock even to the Haitians who are accustomed to living under the constant threat of violence. Almost all of the estimated 4,000 inmates would flee during the jailbreak, leaving the normally overcrowded facility empty by Sunday, March 3rd, with literally no guard in sight and plastic sandals and clothing and furniture strewn all across the facility. The police at the time were effectively powerless to stop it, and as Finance Minister Patrick Poivre would say about the situation, quote, the police were ordered to use all legal means at their disposal to enforce the curfew and apprehend all offenders. But this really wasn't going to matter in the end because the police are reported to be severely undermanned and outgunned in comparison to the gangs, with only 9,000 police officers operating in all of Haiti at the time of the fighting, and from that, being outnumbered heavily by the gangs that they are fighting against. The 72-hour state of emergency and nighttime curfew that was put into place to try and curb the violence and chaos was effectively pointless. It did nothing. But that being said, weirdly enough, there were actually some prisoners among the 4,000 that did actually choose to remain in the prison. Among the few dozen that chose to stay in the prison are 18 former Colombian soldiers that were accused of working as mercenaries in the July 2021 assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse. Amidst the clashes that would occur Saturday night, several of the Colombians shared a video in which they were quite literally pleading for their lives. As one of the men, Francisco Urbe, would say, quote, please, please help us. They are massacring people indiscriminately inside the cells. Now, for a number of people that are watching this, that's probably going to confuse them. Why would killers not want to escape to potential freedom? Why would they be killed? Well, okay, this is a detail that I had not touched on nearly as much in my previous video, the political affiliation of gangs. The reality and very unfortunate truth is that politics in Haiti and gang violence are very closely intertwined. And to explain that, I'm going to need to explain a little bit of the background of the gangs that we've been talking about here in the first place that largely I have skipped over a bit, but it's crucial to understand this. On one side of the aisle, we have the G9 Alliance, whose name is the Revolutionary Forces of the G9 Family and Allies. This is something that was founded and is led by Jimmy Cherizaire, nicknamed Barbecue, that individual that we spoke about earlier, who is an ex-police officer. The G9 Alliance includes many former soldiers and policemen in its ranks, and has for a long time been connected to the PHTK party, until eventually it would distance itself after Ariel Henry became president. And this, my friends, is a very important detail that needs to be stressed. The party that we are talking about here is something that was formally constituted on the 16th of August 2012. And although then-President Michel Martelly was never actually a member of the party, PHTK had affinities with the government, and Martelly was heavily associated with said party, with Jovenel Moïse often being characterized as being the hand-picked successor of Martelly. According to a Haitian Senate article, many Haitian Americans living in Miami would criticize the party as, quote, thieves, with Presidents Michel Martelly and Jovenel Moïse also receiving significant opposition and criticism during their presidencies due to the fact that they were quite corrupt and also from this seemed to be very close with prominent Haitian gangs. Which, yeah, when I say that, that is nothing new in Haiti. Politicians in Haiti have been working hand-in-hand with gangs for literally decades, and G9 had previously been the pro-government gang alliance, which sounds really weird to say. But of course, that didn't really last, as we are where we are today. The G9 Alliance no longer portrays itself as an arm of the government. Instead, it is a revolutionary organization and has begun to create a nationwide alliance dubbed the G20 Network. As an example of this, you have the Delma 6 gang, which is the personal gang of Jimmy Cherizaire, who is the, again, overall head of G9. The gang was already operating while Cherizaire was still an active police officer, signifying the gang's very strong links to the Haitian security forces. Another one of these whose name you can see behind me on the screen right here is Baz Pilat, which is one of the capital's most important gangs, mainly consisting of ex-SWAT elite police officers. So they went from corrupt police within the government to just straight-up gangsters. And on the other side of this gang war is GPEP, and that gang alliance was specifically formed in direct response to G9. It was something that was organized by the non-Brooklyn gang and its head, Jean-Pierre Gabriel, aka T. Gabriel, is heavily believed to be in connection to the Haitian opposition parties. So in other words, from this, it is the parties that are not in power at the moment, but could still use the gangs in order to try and expand their influence. So of course, looking at this, one is going to naturally wonder, how could politicians be tied to these gangs? Like, what is even going on? How is it that they would be able to use these gangs in order to fight against one another? Well, let me give an example. I very obviously cannot put the exact images and videos on the screen, but from 2020 to 2021, G9 was responsible for dozens of different massacres in which at least 200 different people were killed. G9 was believed to have close ties to the government of Moisi, which in turn was accused of large-scale corruption. The coalition members would frequently evade prosecution after the massacres and the clashes, with Cherizaire standing out largely in that regard because despite the fact that there were many, many, many different arrest warrants against this guy, he would just continue to move freely throughout the entire country, completely unchallenged, and also allowed to maintain an active presence on social media with no effective attempts by the Haitian government to actually try and arrest him. Now, looking at the situation, considering how weak the police are in Haiti, one could come to the reasonable understanding that it wasn't that they didn't want to attack him, it was that they were too weak to do so, but no. Over the course of this time period, G9 also began to attack neighborhoods in which civilians were protesting against the president. In addition to that, they were specifically starting clashes against rival gangs with the support of the police. So the gangs were working hand in hand with the police to coordinate their attacks upon rivals. So GPEP that we talked about was specifically founded in opposition to G9 and the reigning government, which in turn made this gang the initial anti-establishment force, so to speak. But that whole thing then gets made null and void with the assassination of Moisi in 2021, when G9 would stand against his successor, Ariel Henry, and also become anti-government. So yeah, the whole reason that I brought up any of this is because the assassins of Moisi did not want to leave the prison, as they had killed the guy that one of the major alliances was affiliated with, and as a result, they would very likely not make it out alive. So moving on from that, on the 4th of March at around 1 p.m. local time, armed gangs would go and attack the heavily fortified Toussaint Louverture International Airport, exchanging gunfire with the police and Haitian armed forces. The whole reason that they did this in the first place was to try and take control of the facility to make sure that Henry would not be able to return to Haiti. Flights were as a result grounded as the airport was shut down. In addition to this, the Haitian National Stadium as well as the National Bank were both attacked. Other public institutions, including schools, banks, whatever it is that would possibly be open, no longer would be. They would be closed. Following all of this, on March 5th, Henry would land at the Luis Munoz Marin International Airport in Puerto Rico in an attempt to try and return to Haiti to control the violence, but to no avail. There would be another reported jailbreak on the 5th of March leading to the death of 3 inmates, and after this, Haitian police were at least able to stop attempts at this escape, the first kind of success that they actually managed to have in this scenario. The next day, on the 6th of March, a police station was attacked and burned down by gangs, with the police at this point seemingly powerless to stop them. Next, the Caribbean Port Services, or CPS terminal, at the Port International de Port-au-Prince, which was a key asset in providing food and supplies, was also attacked and looted, resulting in port operations being suspended indefinitely. Hey everyone, Sakuya here, and before we get back to the show, I would just like to thank today's sponsor, eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure that your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What this means is that now, at this point in Haiti, as of March 6th, we have no airport and there is no maritime port, meaning Haiti was now completely isolated in its own hell, with no real way in or out for people or supplies. It was done. On the 8th of March, gangs would then go and attack two police stations that were near the National Palace, as well as the palace itself, which is supposed to be the home of the Haitian president. In the process, they would burn down the Interior Ministry, which is responsible for internal security, something that, as you can probably guess, it has not been able to handle. On the 9th of March, gangs would then go and attack and occupy the headquarters of the Institute of Social Welfare in Port-au-Prince. That same day, in the Dominican Republic, Haiti's neighbor, they would announce plans to evacuate its officials and citizens from Port-au-Prince. That same day, a large counteroffensive against the gangs would be launched by the Haitian police force in the later hours of the night, after three more police stations were attacked and burned down. Police supplies were seized and multiple Haitian police cars were stolen, only to then end up patrolling the area again, except this time they were in the hands of the gangs instead. And it's at this point that everything is going to absolute chaos, that more and more things are being burned down, that this would be the breaking point for the United States and many other embassies. On March 10th, the U.S. military would carry out an operation in Haiti to airlift non-essential embassy personnel from the country and would add U.S. forces to bolster embassy security. The German Foreign Ministry, meanwhile, would say that its ambassador had joined other EU representatives in leaving for the Dominican Republic. Really, by this point, the security situation had become so incredibly terrible that it seemed that a large international intervention was the only practical way to restore order. Except by this point, it was estimated that such a mission would need to involve anywhere between 5,000 and 10,000 police officers, and from that, it would need to be led by a major economy with experience in police. Whether this be the United States, Canada, Britain, France, or another EU country, that had yet to be determined. In fact, an interesting thing to note here is that as violence intensified over the weekend and Henry's would-be successors were jockeying for position, the leader of El Salvador, who we talked about before, Nayib Bukele, would actually present himself as a person that could help. For anyone who hasn't seen the video that I did on what Nayib Bukele did in El Salvador, he has thrown tens of thousands of Salvadorans in jail as part of a hardline crackdown on its own country's gangs that has led to, well, large-scale amounts of peace. As for what he would say about the matter, he would write about it on X, formerly Twitter, saying, quote, "We can fix it, but we'll need a UNSC, a UN Security Council resolution, the consent of the host country, and all the mission expenses to be covered." As for what would actually be done about the matter, the Jamaican Prime Minister, Andrew Holness, would announce that the representatives from eight different nations, including France, Canada, and the United States, would all meet in Kingston, Jamaica, in order to discuss the ongoing violence and what to do about it. On March 11th, CARICOM, the Caribbean community, would launch the meeting, with Kenya also announcing that its police officers were in pre-deployment phase, meaning that they were ready to deploy to Haiti. However, the police force had still not been given a date for when it would actually end up being deployed. After multiple meetings between the United States and Kenya, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken would announce that the United States was going to offer another $100 million to the Kenyan mission in Haiti, along with $33 million in humanitarian assistance. Mind you, what that means is that that would bring the total amount of contribution from the United States to over $300 million. And in the wake of all of this, Ariel Henry would never actually make it back into power. He would actually give the gangs what it is that they wanted, his resignation. Henry would say in a video addressed late Monday, the 11th of March, that his government would leave power after the establishment of a transitional council, adding, quote, "Haiti needs peace. Haiti needs stability. My government will leave immediately after the inauguration of the council. We will be a caretaker government until they name a prime minister and a new cabinet." Henry's advisor, John Jr. Joseph, would tell CNN that Henry would remain in his role until the formation of a new interim government. What would follow this is that the Caribbean Community and Common Market, CARICOM, would meet in Jamaica and say that it had agreed to set up a transitional council to lay the foundations for elections in Haiti, saying, quote, "We are pleased to announce the commitment to transitional governance arrangement, which paves the way for a peaceful transition of power, continuity of governments, an action plan for near-term security, and the road to free and fair elections. It further seeks to assure that Haiti will be governed by the rule of law." All of this coming from Ifrane Ali, who is the current president of Guyana. And that's all well and good, however, there's a little bit of a complication. You see, following Henry's announcement of his resignation, his removal from power, along with the complete breakdown of law and order in Haiti, Kenya has had to put the deployments of its police on hold. Now, why would that be the case? Why would that happen? I mean, it seems like they had just reached a point where they had just signed an agreement where they would actually be able to do it. Well, no. A statement coming from Kenya's Principal Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Kororo Sing'oe, would say, quote, "Without a political administration in Haiti, there is no anchor on which a police deployment can rest. Hence, the government will await the installation of a new constitutional authority in Haiti." In other words, because Ariel Henry has gone and stepped down, this means that, technically speaking, there is no government for the Kenyan government to actually work with, and so they can't do anything until the transition actually happens. One of the interesting things to note about this is that despite the Kenyan official statement, the U.S. would believe at the time that the peacekeeping mission to Haiti was going to move forward, quote, "without delay." And what they would say on the matter is, quote, "What the Kenyan government said in its statement is that they have to have a government with which to collaborate." This coming from spokesperson Matthew Miller of the State Department, and he would say this at a press briefing. He said that the appointment of a transitional council and a new government would happen, quote, "in the very near future," clearing the way for Kenya to deploy its forces. But okay, what does future mean? Really, when we're talking about government, who can actually say? Meanwhile, instability within the country was only going to grow, leading to fears of a mass migration event and violence from Haiti spilling over into the United States. One such example of this fear comes from Sheila Chafilis McCormick, who is a congresswoman of Haitian descent, who would release a press statement saying that the gang takeover of Haiti poses a security threat to the United States. She would also tell reporters that she would be holding a meeting with Haitian leaders from South Florida to discuss the country's ongoing conflict. U.S. Department of Defense officials would state later that they were alerted about potential maritime mass migrations from Haiti, and use of the United States Navy has been considered to stop that flow of migration. On March 13th, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis would announce plans to deploy 250 additional soldiers to help deal with a possible crisis in Florida, including the Florida National Guard. That very same day, a new U.S. Fleet anti-terrorism security team would be on its way to protect the U.S. Embassy. And as for that transitionary council back in Haiti, well, its future would be very quickly becoming uncertain. The council was supposed to be made up of 7 voting members and 2 observers from different political coalitions and sections of society. The general expectation from the United States, as the State Department would say, is that it expected that members of the transition council would be appointed over the course of the next 24 to 48 hours, this being back in like the second week of March. But the progress of this has lagged behind a bit. As the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, would say during a visit to Austria, quote, "This is never going to be smooth and never going to be linear. So that's a work in progress, but we've seen that move forward." Which, on that note, he was right. It was not going to be smooth. One of the political party platforms, Petite Dessalines, would say on Wednesday, March 13th, that it was going to pull out of the agreement for the council, that it instead was going to plan on installing its own council, and that it wanted to include Guy Philippe. Which, if you don't remember that name from the previous video that I did, Guy Philippe is one of the rebel leaders who was deported from the United States this past November after serving 6 years in prison for money laundering. One of the things that he's trying to do after coming back is seeking amnesty for gang leaders, you know, from all of the crimes that they have committed. So you would think, okay, great, we are right back here to square one. But then, in a significant reversal, a week later, the Petite Dessalines political party would announce on Wednesday, March 20th, the appointment of its representative to the CARICOM consensus-led transitional presidential council. Oh my god, that is a long phrase to say. The TPC. That's probably what I'm going to need to say now. Reports in Haitian media suggest that Moïse's reversal of position specifically came under intense pressure from international actors to comply with the CARICOM agreement. And this is a claim that the former senator did not deny. During an interview with the Le Nouveliste newspaper, Jean-Charles would acknowledge that he made the decision to participate in the presidential council at the request of a, quote, major country that urged his party to break the deadlock, allowing the council to be announced and officially installed. However, he would decline to actually say the name of what country made this happen in the first place. So awesome. Okay, that is happening. But meanwhile, while all this political maneuvering is happening in the background, Haiti is also still burning itself to the ground. On March 21st, suspected gang members were killed during an attack on the Pétionville neighborhood on the southern outskirts of Haiti's capital, as a clash with police and locals pointed to the resurgence of vigilante justice from the Bois Kwa movement, while the state still tries to sort itself out. As covered in my previous video, the people of Haiti could no longer rely on the government or the police or anything, and for any kind of justice to happen, they had to take matters into their own hands. Reportedly, a Reuters reporter would see two suspected gang members, including a leader known as Makindal, killed and set on fire. Footage seen by Reuters earlier would show the bodies lying and being dragged on the street, with one man having his hands cut off. Makindal's family home was also set on fire. Earlier, Le Nouveliste had reported at least 15 different people had been killed in attacks around Pétionville, home to several upscale hotels as well as around a dozen different embassies. Residents there would barricade themselves inside their homes while armed men would carry out fresh attacks east of the city. Pétionville is close to hotels that are threatened by gang leader Jimmy Chazer, who said that he would go after hotel owners who were hiding old guard politicians there. And the trouble that we're talking about here with politicians was something that was only going to continue through this past weekend, which then brings us to where we are right now, the point in which I am recording this video. The efforts to try and set up a transitional government and fill the power vacuum that has been left in Haiti is something that would effectively collapse on Monday, as delegates would just choose to squabble over who was going to be leader, and death threats would ultimately end up leading one of the members to quit over the weekend. Haiti's ambassador to UNESCO, Dominique Dupuy, who was chosen by one of the political coalitions, said that she was going to step aside, citing threats against her and her family, as well as misogynistic attacks that she was facing. As the country burns around them, the only thing that is holding up the official formation of the council was the disagreement over who should lead it, this being a statement that would come from one of the delegates who would speak anonymously about the matter. Meetings were held throughout the weekend and on Monday, with a virtual summit between delegates and CARICOM set for the afternoon, but at the time that I'm making this, which is on the evening of Tuesday, March 26th, nothing has really happened. Which, actually, no, hold on, before I even leave this here right now, I did go back and double check before I finish off this video, and yes, yeah, something did actually happen here, and it's not good. On Monday evening, tentative members of the council were due to elect their chair, but the meeting was postponed indefinitely as several representatives withdrew from the council, one of the members told AFP on the condition of anonymity. Leslie Voltaire, the delegate of the Fanmi Lavalas party, said in a letter to her colleagues that electing a president was not possible without a political accord signed between the different sectors. And just as the council seemed to be finalized, René Jean Gimol, one of the non-voting members who had in recent days called for voting privileges, announced that he was no longer going to take part. So that's it then. All this time, all this effort, everything that was put in, and yet nothing seems to be able to happen in Haiti, as even the very people who are supposed to be saving it can do nothing but squabble over who is going to be leader. At the point that I'm making this video, gangs are still thought to control some 80% of the capital and swaths of the countryside now. With no signs of things getting better and the council squabbling amongst itself, Haiti is going to continue to suffer, and only time is now going to tell what is going to happen next. The only thing that we can be sure of, though, is that before things get better, they are going to get significantly worse. My friends, this has been Stakuyi with the History of Everything podcast YouTube channel, and thank you all very much for following up with me here on this second episode that I've now had to create covering things with Haiti. If there is any particular questions that you have, if there's any particular areas that we should cover or things that you think that we should focus on, then by all means, please go and let me know in the comment section below, and that is something that I will definitely take a look at. Still, that being said, there is no way to tell what is going to happen here on YouTube, as everything that we are talking about is not only spicy, it's a current, ongoing, and very complicated conflict. I hope you all will do what you can to help this video in the algorithm, and I will see you all next time. Thank you, my friends, and best of luck to you.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China. where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.